Radio Prague News. The Czech presidency of the European Union has urged member states to rein in their growing public deficit as soon as the economic crisis allows. Three Czech experts have left for Israel and the Palestinian territories in order to assess the humanitarian needs of people hit by the war in the Gaza Strip. And the Czech representation in Brussels has complied with Bulgaria's request for its section of the controversial Entropa artwork to be covered up. The Czech presidency of the European Union has urged member states to rein in their growing public deficit as soon as the economic crisis allows. Chairing a meeting of EU finance ministers devoted to crisis management, the Czech finance minister Miroslav Kalousek said that the coordinated fiscal stimulus now taking place must be followed by a coordinated effort to cut public deficits as soon as circumstances allow. The 27-member bloc agreed last December to pump 200 billion euros into their economies in the hope of minimizing the impact of the recession, and public deficits, which are normally kept under 3% of GDP, are ballooning. The European Commission is expecting the combined EU shortfall to reach 4.4% of output in 2009. At least 12 member states are expected to go over limit this year. Three Czech experts have left for Israel and the Palestinian territories in order to assess the humanitarian needs of people hit by the war in the Gaza Strip. The team was sent out by the Czech EU presidency ahead of a foreign minister's meeting in Brussels on Wednesday, which is also to be attended by Israeli representatives. The EU is currently seeking ways to consolidate the ceasefire, improve humanitarian aid, restore electricity and water supplies, and stop arms smuggling into Gaza. The Czech representation in Brussels has complied with Bulgaria's request for its section of the controversial Entropa artwork, in which the country is pictured as a land of squat toilets, to be covered up. Created by Czech artist David Černý to mark the start of the Czech presidency, the symbolic map depicts the 27 member states through a variety of crude stereotypes that have sparked both amusement and anger. Czech Deputy Prime Minister for European Affairs Alexander Vondra apologized last week for any offense the work may have caused. Entropa has been a source of embarrassment to Czech officials in Brussels after it emerged that artist David Černý duped the government into thinking that he was working on the project together with artists from the 26 other member states. Czech Industry Minister Martin Ziman on Tuesday welcomed the resumption of natural gas supplies from Russia, but said that Russian gas must flow through Ukraine to Europe for at least 3 days before the crisis can be considered well and truly over. The Czech EU presidency led the talks aimed at resolving the gas dispute between Russia and Ukraine, but its efforts were repeatedly thwarted by fresh controversy between the two neighbor states. The drawn-out disputes over pricing and payment have led the EU to consider a diversification of its energy supplies. A public mass for architect Jan Kaplický, who died in Prague last week, is to be held at the Church of St. Anne in Prague's Old Town next Tuesday. The actual funeral is to be a private affair for family and friends. Mr. Kaplický died of heart failure last Wednesday, just hours after the birth of his daughter Johanka. And finally, a look at the weather forecast. The next few days are expected to be overcast with rain or sleet showers and day temperatures between 0 and 4 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Rosie Johnston. In today's programme, as Barack Obama becomes the 44th President of the United States of America, we find out what Czechs expect from the world's most powerful man.
I'm very excited because it's a new face. He's exciting and his new point of view. That's the thing I appreciate most, new point of view.
The government approves a plan to sell one of its biggest assets, Czech Airlines. And with freezing weather claiming the lives of more than 20 homeless people this winter, can more be done to help? And then later, we look back at the life and work of architect Jan Kaplitsky, who died suddenly last week. All that coming up, so stay tuned. This Tuesday, Barack Obama is sworn in as the 44th President of the United States of America. Mr. Obama takes his oath of office in front of a huge crowd in Washington and millions of people around the rest of the world. Excitement has been building ahead of the Obama presidency in Europe as well as in the US, with the Czech Republic proving no exception. A recent STEM poll found Mr. Obama Czech's favourite foreign politician by a margin of nearly 20%. But when it comes down to it, what do Czechs actually expect of America's new leader? We asked a few on the streets of Prague.
About Barack Obama, I'm very excited because it's a new face. He's exciting and his new point of view. That's the thing I appreciate most, new point of view. I hope that the new politic of USA will be not so maybe aggressive and violent.
I hope that Obama fixes the financial situation in the world, and I hope that he ends the war in Iraq, but those are probably the answers that everybody would give.
I hope that America will not be the military state anymore, that they won't send the army to another parts of the world. Yeah, because I don't agree with this politic of America that they send their army to Afghanistan, to Iraq, and I hope they will take their army back to America.
The key word throughout Obama's presidential campaign was change. But what differences will there really be between Mr. Obama's policies and those of the outgoing president, George W. Bush? Earlier today, I asked Krzysztof Kozak, a professor from Charles University's American Studies Department.
There will definitely be a much more continuity than you would expect. The U.S. foreign policy, for example, is a sort of long-term process. The bureaucrats in Washington, they have this sort of inner inertia. Many of the people served under Clinton, so they know the game in Washington. So in this respect, you can't expect like a revolution. But on the other hand, some things can change pretty quickly. For example, people talk a lot about the closing of Guantanamo, for example. Quite a lot of things that the president can do just by a stroke of a pen. Closing Guantanamo is one thing. There could be, it's called the executive order. With the executive order, you can, for example, mandate increased fuel efficiency for cars just by a stroke of a pen. So on the level of the smaller changes, things can start happening quite quickly. But it won't be a revolution in the sense of 1917 Russian Revolution, that people will take over the government and crazy things will start to happen.
In America right now, Bush is leaving office, not a very popular man. His poll ratings are sort of somewhere in the 20s. But here he's received a lot of praise from both Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek and President Klaus. Would you say that's the general opinion here, that Bush hasn't been necessarily the unpopular failure president that maybe some Americans are seeing him as right now?
Well, I think the Czechs are kind of divided on this issue because, for example, I teach students as well, and with the students, they are very much in the American mindset and they see Bush as a big failure, I would say most of them. But I think what you see here is the sort of automatic anti-Russian sentiment is very, very strong. And so people supported John McCain because of his stronger stance against Russia. So I think people here are not really able to sort of judge the Bush presidency by its merits, but as a symbol of you have to have strong U.S. presence, you have to stand up to the dictators, you have to stand up to Russians. I think that symbolically speaking, in this respect, the Bush presidency was good for them.
What, in very concrete terms, do you think the Obama presidency will have as an effect on the Czech Republic?
Well, obviously, people here are talking a lot about the missile defense. And I think at this point, it is really not very clear what is going to happen. Because Obama, what he did is he opened a small door for himself in the sense that he wanted to really test the system before pouring more money into it. But at the same time, he said he's committed to the project in general. So I think what we might see is some sort of postponement of the deployment. And it really will depend on how much money these people will have on the budget for these things as well.
Obama is coming to Europe. He obviously was here during his presidential campaign, but he's coming back, that's certain, for a NATO summit in April. How likely is it that he will, as the Czech government have requested, how likely is it that we'll see him here in the Czech Republic at that time?
Well, this, it would be a totally wild guess. I don't, I have no idea. And the thing is, his schedule is very busy. And then again, like apart from the missile defense, and I think Obama will sort of like try to delay these issues. So I think I would think that his advisors will tell him that there might be like some more productive use of his time than to drag on this issue that is politically kind of dangerous for him.
That was Krzysztof Kozak from the Department of American Studies at Prague's Charles University, whom I spoke to earlier today. Back to this side of the Atlantic now, with news that the Czech government approved a plan on Monday to sell its 90% stake in the national carrier Czech Airlines by September the 30th. The cabinet said the buyer would be chosen in a two-round tender, with several buyers already expressing interest. The government also wants to privatise Prague's Ruzyně International Airport by 2010, as Rob Cameron reports.
Mirek Topolánek's centre-right government has talked of selling Czech Airlines, with 5 million passengers annually, one of Central Europe's biggest carriers, for some time. But on Monday, the idea came closer to reality. The government approved a plan to sell off its 91.51% stake in Czech Airlines in a two-stage tender, which should be completed by the end of September. Most analysts believe the airline is worth around 5 billion Czech crowns, or $230 million. But the chairman of Czech Airlines' supervisory board, Ivan Kočárník, surprised observers by saying he wouldn't sell the company for less than 10 billion. Prime Minister Topolánek laughed off the comments as ridiculous. But could Czech Airlines raise more? Jan Prokáska is the chief analyst for the Brno-based brokerage firm Cirrus.
Impossible is nothing in that world. If you can see, for example, Kaká and Manchester City, that unbelievable pricing in that situation of financial crisis and on bad condition of the loan sector, 10 billions, it's not real, but I will be happy and it will be fine for everybody in Czech Republic that somebody, for example, from Asia will pay this amount. But I believe that it will be something near to 5 billion.
The government plans to pick a buyer in two stages. First, the cabinet will select a pool of potential buyers, focusing on the sale's foreign policy consequences as well as the bidder's safety record. The second stage will be a simple auction, with the airline going to the highest bidder. The successful buyer will have to guarantee that Czech Airlines remains a national-style carrier and keeps its fleet at Prague's Ruzyně Airport for at least 5 years. Several dozen airlines are said to be interested, although only the Russian carrier Aeroflot and the Czech-Icelandic charter airline and low-cost operator Travel Service have publicly confirmed their interest. But is the Czech Republic really willing to sell its national airline to, say, Aeroflot, given the two countries' troubled history? Isn't a national carrier part of a nation's identity? In some cases, says Jan Prokáska, but not all.
I believe that this is not some kind of identity. I believe that there are, for example, Czech beer or something like that. It's better for identity, but Czech national airlines, I don't believe in that. I think that this is normal company which is used for Czech people, but which is not helpful to make some image for Czech Republic.
Mr. Prokáska goes on to say that a strong strategic partner will help Czech Airlines weather the current financial storm, with 2009 looking like a very bleak year for the airline industry. The cabinet reserves the right to cancel the privatisation at any time, but if it goes well, it intends to use a similar model to sell off Ruzyně Airport.
Rob Cameron with that report. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Radio Prague. Now, temperatures in the Czech Republic have risen above zero for the first time in weeks, and while that's good news for most of us, for the homeless, slightly warmer weather could mean the difference between life and death. So far this winter, over 20 people, most of them homeless, have died as a consequence of freezing weather. Although there's no official data available, the numbers are definitely higher than in the last couple of years. Are the authorities doing enough to deal with the problem? Ruth Frankova reports.
Finding a place to sleep is one of the most pressing problems facing the homeless in freezing weather. Due to the exceptionally cold winter, humanitarian organizations all over the country have been offering more beds or at least shelters with chairs in the past couple of weeks. Petra Lakatoshova is the head of Nadeye, or Hope, one of the biggest charities that has been helping the homeless since the early 1990s.
The capacity of all our centres is being used to the full at the moment, which means that all our beds are occupied. Over the past couple of days, when temperatures dropped far below zero, we kept our day centres open around the clock. Every night, up to 120 people could come and spend the night on a chair. The main aim, of course, was to prevent the homeless from freezing to death.
Every winter, the city of Prague has provided some kind of emergency accommodation to the homeless. This year, it also employs field workers who inform the homeless about the possibility of spending the night in temporary shelters. Although there is still a surplus of beds, Petra Lakatoshova from Nadeye says not all the homeless are actually interested in using their services.
Some people don't look for help in our facilities. They prefer to stay in temporary shelters such as garden sheds, squats or underground sewers. They often have dogs and they don't want to part with them. Or they live in couples and don't want to be separated. Most facilities, including ours, only provide separate accommodation for men and women.
Another problem is that the homeless have to meet certain requirements if they want to be accommodated.
All of the services provided by our day centres are for free. In night shelters, however, we charge our clients from 20 up to 100 crowns. And according to our rules, we do not accommodate people who are drunk. This tends to be a problem because our clients do tend to drink and then they are more likely to freeze.
According to Petra Lakatoshova, the number of the charity's clients has not been increasing over the past couple of years. Their structure, however, has been changing with the number of migrant workers gradually rising. With current layoffs and more very cold weather expected, the problem could get more serious in the future.
Ruth Frankova there. Now, in the last part of our show today, Dominic Yoon looks back at the life and work of architect Jan Kaplitsky, who died suddenly last week.
The world of Czech culture is in mourning following the death of the renowned architect Jan Kaplitsky, who passed away on the evening of Wednesday, the 14th of January. The loss is not just a major one for the Czech Republic, but a deep personal one for his family. Mr. Kaplitsky, aged 71, died from sudden heart failure on what his family described as one of the greatest days in his life. He was just 3 hours into celebrating the birth of his daughter, Johanka, his wife still in hospital. The sudden loss has thrown the full spectrum of Kaplitsky's life, achievements and disappointments into the Czech limelight. For this architect had spent much of his life in London, and his most recent and noted professional experience with the Czech Republic had been both painful and disappointing. The failure of his award-winning National Library design, nicknamed the Blob, to gain approval by the Czech authorities. I spoke with Eva Jiříčná, a fellow London-based Czech architect and long-time close friend of Mr. Kaplitsky, and I began by asking her to describe the kind of man Jan Kaplitsky had been.
Well, he was an absolutely extraordinary person. He was absolutely unusual and extremely talented architect. And he was also an extraordinary and unusual man. There are very few people who you can meet in your life, you know, who could compare with him. It is very rare to come across those people. So I think that everybody who had anything to do with him just would have to be grateful for having met him.
Jan Kaplický was born in Prague in 1937. His father was a painter and sculptor, and his mother was a sketch artist. Kaplický studied at the College of Applied Arts and Architecture in Prague from 1956 to 1962, and immigrated to Britain shortly after the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968. In 2004, Radio Prague caught up with Jan Kaplický, and my colleague Ian Willoughby asked him about the decision to leave Czechoslovakia.
I realized that time has come, you can't stay here because there's absolutely no hope in your life. Maybe later, luckily we are sitting here and Czech Republic is part of NATO and Europe and all this and that, which is incredible. But that time I thought I can't waste more of time sort of sitting and waiting if some Politburo will make a decision or not. That is not how you can live your life. That is impossibility.
Eva Jiříčná explains what the pair found in London.
In 1968, the situation was extremely unusual because I left the country before the invasion. He left the country after the invasion. We both very shortly found out that we couldn't go back for a considerable amount of time. In the meantime, London was the most exciting place to be. It was the period of Beatles, flower power, miniskirts, hot pants in architecture.
According to Eva Jiříčná, Kaplický used his skills to climb, albeit slowly, the architectural ladder in his new home.
Jan was extremely well equipped to recognize who were the people who he wanted to work with. He worked with all the famous architects of that period, Denis Lazdun, Richard Rogers, and Norman Foster. Of course, we were nobodies, so we were employed at the lowest possible position, and it took a long time before he had a chance even to have his drawing board, but he could just have started doing his fantastic drawings and occupy himself with his own project. But actually, it was only in the 80s when he started having an impact on the architectural world with abilities to build and to become a part of the World League.
Zdeněk Lukeš is an expert on architecture and was also a friend of Jan Kaplický. He noted how the architect had developed a futuristic style early on in his career.
If you look at his sketches from 70s, 80s, it's very contemporary architecture, and I think that he started with so-called blob constructions in that era, but it was not possible to build that type of buildings in that 60s, 70s, 80s. But today we have possibility to build this type of architecture.
Mr. Lukeš also recalled Mr. Kaplický's interest in military hardware and even spaceships.
He designed some spaceships for NASA in 70s and 80s, and he admired atomic submarines, for instance, spaceships and everything.
In 1979, Jan Kaplický set up Future Systems, seeking to further develop his futuristic style. But as the architect recalled in 2004, acceptance was not always easy to find.
Many years. I would say 10 years, maybe more. Particularly if you're doing the things which are not automatically accepted or whatever, or you don't want to go 100% commercial line, which maybe would be easier. You must realize you don't have any capital whatsoever. I ran away with, I had $100 borrowed from my client, and you can't write a letter to your mother and say, please send me another 100.
In 1994, Kaplický scored his first major success, winning a competition to design a futuristic media centre at the Lord's Cricket Ground. The design underscored a style that was to become quintessential Kaplický, and the completed project ended up winning him the prestigious Sterling Prize. Several years later, Jan Kaplický was awarded a commission to build a Selfridges building in Birmingham. The resulting design, a personal favourite of Kaplický's, was also praised by fellow professionals. Several other Kaplický works are being constructed around the world, including a subway station in Naples and the Maserati Museum in Modena, Italy. Yet it was the desire and wish to create a work built inside his native Czech Republic that most strongly motivated Kaplický in later life. In 2007, he won a commission to build a National Library building in Prague, but the design proved too controversial for the Prague authorities, and it was eventually cancelled. This controversy appeared to underscore a long-held resistance to working in the Czech Republic, as Zdeněk Lukeš explains.
When I asked him about a possibility to take part on any competition for any building here or to start to work on any project here, his answer was, no, it's not possible because people here ignored me and I have no chance to build something here in Prague because I'm like an enemy in this country.
Enemy because the architect had apparently been too outspoken in his criticism of some of his contemporaries. Why not stay in London then, was the reaction of some, recalls Zdeněk Lukáš. And then, when the recent National Library project fell apart, the old hostilities appeared to have resurfaced.
I remember that my friend mentioned only six names of our architects who fought for his design. Six only. We have about, 3,000 architects here in Prague.
But as Eva Jiříčná reveals, Jan Kaplický never gave up hope.
In my last conversation with him, which was on Sunday last week, he was so hopeful that he was going to build a building. He was telling me about the foundation which was established to start collecting money and to help him to realize his dream. And he was full of expectations that in the next year or so that building was going to be built on the site where he designed it for. So he died with full belief that he was going to build that building and leave a mark in Czech Republic.
However that battle turns out, it appears that Kaplický's wish may come true in another quarter of the Czech Republic. A design for a proposed 2 billion crown Congress and Concert Hall Centre in the city of České Budějovice was approved shortly before the architect's death. Following his passing, the city authorities say they remain determined to find the money and finally build a Kaplický building in his native Czech Republic.
That was Dominic Yun looking back on the life of Jan Kaplický, who died last week, aged 71. And that brings us to the end of our show today here on Radio Prague. But there's just time before I go to remind you that you can write to us with your reactions to any of the things you've heard in today's show, either by email at english@radio.cz or by post at Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But for now, from me, Rosie Johnston, and the rest of the team here in Prague, it's thanks for listening and goodbye.